Älskar du den här podden? Stötta den genom IKAs nya supporterfunktion. Det är helt upp till dig hur mycket du vill bidra med och det finns ingen bindningstid. Klicka på länken i poddbeskrivningen för att visa din uppskattning och stötta podden.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hej och välkomna till Någonting om aktier med mig, Tim Hansson och Marcus Gädda.
Tjena Tim.
Hej Marcus, hur är läget?
Jo men det är bra, det är bra. Hur är det själv?
Jo det är bara bra, det är varmt som vanligt.
Det är 26 grader.
Ja men det har varit en riktigt bra sommar hittills faktiskt. Börsen, inte lika varm, det är lite kallt. Jag såg att det var nedgång på 2,5% idag på OMX.
Var det fortfarande, jag såg bara förmiddagen och då såg jag ändå att det vände upp där från 1,7 ner till bara ner 1,3. Men ja. Är det ner nu 2 säger du?
Ja, någonting sånt. Jag fick ett meddelande från Avanza idag, jag har inte vågat öppna än.
Styggt. Ja.
Men idag har vi lite ett speciellt avsnitt framför oss faktiskt.
Visst är det så?
Jag tycker jag kommer bli väldigt intressant.
Visst är det så? Men innan lite det var... Vi spelar in detta den sista juni. Men vi kommer släppa det här lite längre fram.
Ja, vi får se helt enkelt.
Så att vi egentligen alla nyhetstakes vi tar är inte så relevanta. Så
nej, antagligen.
Vi besparar dem helt enkelt.
Liksom. Ja.
Så att, och betal på att bespara er så har vi faktiskt... det finns väldigt många olika sätt att... undvika och missa pengar eller förlora pengar.
Ja, det är det man vill göra.
Ja, och en stor del av det är ju liksom förstå hur andra tänker och hur marknaden tänker.
Och hur man själv tänker, ja. Såklart.
Så att, och med det sagt så vi har faktiskt vår första avsnitt som är på engelska.
Ja, vi ska ha en liten internationell gäst här idag. Mm. Ska vi dra igång direkt eller?
Ajebus.
Okej, och med det välkomnar vi Michael Kirchler. Welcome.
Hi, welcome.
How are you feeling today?
Very good, thank you very much. So I just had teaching with my students here in Innsbruck and it went very well. So I'm very much looking forward as well to this episode today.
Yeah,
okay, great.
So you're in Innsbruck in Austria?
Yeah, that's in Austria. So maybe some of you know it from skiing or from vacation. So it's surrounded by mountains.
Yeah, I know it.
And there are a lot of students in Innsbruck, so it's around one quarter of the population in Innsbruck is students. So it's a very nice city with a lot of young people. Therefore, the vibe is pretty good. So
okay,
this is very comfortable here.
Yeah,
it's a bit like Uppsala or Lund, maybe here in Sweden.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so it's comparable. Yeah, but a little bit more mountains. So that's the difference.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Okay, so do you want to give your background, maybe what you do and where you come from and so forth?
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from Austria, and My profession is I'm a professor of finance at the University of Innsbruck, and I also teach finance in Gothenburg in Sweden. That's why I get to know Tim.
Tim has spoken so much about you, so
I can imagine.
No,
yeah.
But seriously though, I have been discussing some of the theories in the past episodes, like mentioning them at least.
Yeah.
Very good. So all the listeners know already a little bit about what I'm doing.
Hopefully.
Yeah, so I grew up in Austria, studied also in Austria, and now I'm a professor in the University of Innsbruck, and I'm mainly concerned with experimental finance. So we run experiments with humans to investigate how they behave. So that's the more complicated version. But it's not that difficult. I could give you an example. So for instance, one experiment could be something like this. So think about the largest tree in the world. So Tim is already laughing. He knows already what I'm aiming for. So what do you think? Is the largest tree of the world larger or smaller than 50 meters? And you have to check yes or no.
Larger.
Yes, I think so as well.
And then the final question is, so how large do you think is the largest tree in the world?
103 meters.
I think it's 150 meters. I already forgot the answer.
Yeah, no problem. The correct answer is irrelevant. So
okay.
This experiment is usually what I do with students in one of my first courses. Half of them get exactly this protocol. So they get 50 as an anchor, 50 meters. But the other half get 350. So they get this information. Do you think that the largest tree is larger or smaller than 350 meters? And in the end, what do we compare? We simply compare the estimates, the guesses of the individuals. And do you think, does this anchor has an impact on what they guess, the 50 or the 350?
Of course it has.
Of course.
Yes. So usually it's those with the high anchor, they have double or triple the estimates than the others. And this is a very simple example of an experiment. It usually always works. And it shows us that anchorings, that irrelevant numbers influence us in our decisions, in our predictions.
I only know anchoring from, like, you know, when they set prices and they say, oh, they have 30% discount from this price, and that price is just way too high to start off.
That's another example we talked about. So that the formal prices serve as anchors, and the discounts then all of a sudden feel great. I mean, then it's a great deal, I think, because it's 30% off, but maybe it was never, but maybe the original price never was that high. But people feel better afterwards, and they purchase more frequently. So these are some simple examples of experiments. And I have another example as well, which is more related to stock markets. So think about your favorite sports team. Let's say your favorite football team.
Is it okay with ice hockey?
Oh, ice hockey, sorry. But this year, the championships were not that successful, right?
No, at least not here in Gothenburg.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah, think about your favorite sports team. Let's assume football. So your team is down 2-0 halftime, but in the end, because of some magic, the final result is a draw, so 2-2.
Yeah.
Are you happy?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
It was almost a comeback.
Exactly. What about the opposite? I mean, our team is 2-0 in front during halftime, and in the end, it's a draw, 2-2. Are we similarly happy or more disappointed?
More disappointed, obviously.
Yes, that's what usually people are. But, I mean, Homo economicus, or this perfectly rational individual, would say, I don't care. In the end, it's 1 point for the league table. No matter whether I was down or up during halftime. But we are humans, and usually football spectators are more happy once they have the comeback rather than when they were in front during halftime. And we run an experiment transforming this idea to the financial market. So we gave finance professionals, but also student investors, different charts from the last 1 year. And not surprisingly, those charts were modeled like, okay, in for some charts, it was like the football team that was down in the first half. So the stock market went down 30% during mid of the year of this particular stock. And then in the end, it went up and we made, I don't know, 10% return.
Yeah, kind of like during COVID when it went down and went up.
Yeah, for instance.
Yeah.
And some other charts had the opposite pattern. So they went up 30% first and then they dropped in the second half of the year down to only plus 10% in the end. Again, home economics would say 10% is 10%. But we found that the students, but also the professional investors, were much more happy with those stocks that had the comeback towards the end of the year rather than those stocks that dropped from an annual high in the middle of the year towards the end of the year. So this is how we do research. We investigate how people behave in those situations. And I think you can already imagine this has a lot of implications for real investment or in general decisions out there.
Mm, of course. And also I can also see the resemblance being here when you have a stock that is down 20% from somewhere. I mean, you find that, that's 20% down from what it was.
Now it's cheap.
Yeah, it still doesn't matter. It still might be overvalued. Mm. And it still might be a shit company.
Of course.
It's just 20% less expensive.
Mm. Yeah. But I think it's really interesting because, as you said, like Homo economicus, the rational man, is always preached around in microfinance or maybe in all the other courses I've had during my bachelor. It's been mostly about homo economicus and being so logical. But in the truth is that you aren't that rational.
Exactly. And that's behavioral finance. We strip off the logical aspects of this homo economicus and simply investigate how do people behave in reality. What are the differences? And this anchoring and the second one was the so-called framing effect. Those are two examples of what we are doing and what we are also teaching in class.
What's the framing effect?
The framing effect tells us, okay, there's a certain decision problem, like for instance, this investment decision I just told you. And depending on how I frame the decision, people decide differently. So in the end, this was a simple decision. How happy are you with a 10% return at the end of the year? So this was the core of the decision. But the frame was different. I simply showed you the trajectory during the year. And in one case, you had the comeback. In another case, you had the drop from half from July. And this is framing. Depending on how I frame the same decision, people behave differently, for instance.
Okay. And what other type of research have you done? What have you been researching in the past?
Yeah, this was one example. But maybe this is interesting for the listeners, how I came to become a professor. So
Go ahead.
Long time ago, at the end of the 1990s, there was this so-called dot-com bubble. I think some of you,
boo.com.
All of you are pretty familiar with that. And this was just pretty crazy time, especially in Europe, because, there were these tech companies popping up and quite a lot of private investors entered the market for the first time. And during 1998, 1999, almost all of the tech stocks, no matter which business model was in the background, were increasing in price. Okay? And, I was also thrilled. I found it interesting. I was at the beginning of my university studies and then I invested a little bit. Fortunately, I did not have so much money, which prevented me from doing too many stupid things. And then there was this turnaround during March 20 when the tech stocks crashed. There was this dot-com bubble or the crash of the dot-com bubble in March 2000, sorry. And the stock market or the tech stocks never came back, or most of them did not come back. So, for instance, in Germany, the so-called Neue Markt, composed of tech stocks, went down 80% during the next 2.5 years. And this fascinated me. I mean, I wasn't fascinated that I lost some money. I mean, only a couple of hundred of euros. But what I was fascinated at was, how can so many people on the stock market be wrong? I mean, even during March 2000, in the stock market newsletters, people wrote predictions of, oh, this particular stock will go up another 100% the next 4 months. And some people were still enthusiastic in March, April, that the party will never stop. And I was highly interested and thought, how can the market be that wrong? How can so many people be collectively wrong in let's say, in judging those tech stocks? And this was the starting point of my master thesis at that time. And the first experiments that we did back in 2003, 2004 were also concerned with bubbles. So we simply modeled asset markets in a computer laboratory. And at that time, the student traders, they could trade those artificial assets. And we identified, let's say, origins of bubbles. So we could turn on bubbles in the laboratory. And we could turn them off. And this was pretty fascinating for me. And that's why I was, I stuck into academia.
Is it because we're just so, I mean, we're pack animals, so to speak? I mean,
herd animals.
Yeah.
Much better. Is that one of the main reasons why the market was so collectively wrong? What do you say?
I would say so. So when we did a lot of those market experiments in the laboratory where we could identify individual factors. And one factor is if all of a sudden a lot of new investors enter the market for some reason, because all of a sudden they realize, oh, there's a party going on and my neighbor already made some money, I should invest as well, even without knowing what a stock is. This is one of the historical reasons why bubbles emerge. So simply demand pressure, and this therefore, prices are bid up pretty strongly. And this was one of the reasons for the dot-com bubble, that a herd of inexperienced traders all of a sudden entered the market. And studies also show that smart money left the market earlier than the private investors left. And I think Bitcoin also offers some example showing that it's mainly driven by private investors that herd onto the market, and then when prices go down, they herd out of the market.
It kind of resembles like 2021, and it's something that we have experienced as well here at Unga Aktiesparare, because we have so much influx of new savers, of course. And then in the latest 6 months, maybe it's been a sharp downturn.
Definitely. I mean, we can see the interest in both just general people being actives. You can see on like financial Twitter, I mean, there's a huge difference in the amount of tweets and what
activity,
people are, what people are saying, and just like how involved people are, which is, I mean it's the most clearest sign, because I always say it's always the private investors that are going to sit with Svarte Petter, the losing hand in poker.
Exactly.
So because institutional money, big money, it's going to move faster, even though it's more. I mean, and
it's bigger.
Yeah. And they work with it. I mean, they know the risks and whatnot, and they're just much more well informed than, I mean, private investors. Yeah. So, and it's going to be interesting to see how many private investors are going to be left in the end of 2022.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's sad if they enter the market at the peak and then they leave at the bottom. That would be the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Of course, now you want to sit tight and maybe purchase even more.
Yeah, but historically, I mean, those upswing periods like dot-com, or also after the COVID crash during 2020, those periods are usually the periods where people are broader, let's say, a bunch of people becomes aware that there is a stock market or that there's something going on the stock market, because the media is more and more reporting about the upswing on the stock market. And this probably triggers quite a lot of people to enter the market as well. So usually private investors don't enter the market for the first time in a downswing.
No, probably
because
not.
That's not attractive for them. So that's a little bit unfortunate for private investors if they lack knowledge about stock markets. That's why those podcasts are so important to educate people.
Thank you. Okay.
That's why we are here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe.
Okay, but so then you went on to write your master thesis, of course. And how did you become end up becoming a professor? And is it something that you recommend other people doing?
Well, I think in 2003 I finalized my master, and then I was fascinated by this kind of research to run experiments and to isolate factors that drive individual behavior. So this is still extremely fascinating, and I think, Tim, you know it from the course that we had, that even in a simple course, those anchoring experiments or other experiments, they are pretty simple to run, but highly educatable, because people fall into those traps themselves, and then they know those concepts much better. That, oh, yeah, I was, let's say, influenced by an anchor, for instance, by irrelevant information. And this fascinated me during my master thesis. That's why I did my PhD thesis, and this was finalized in 2006. And then, yeah, I stayed at university because I loved research, because I loved to do additional experiments and to find interesting answers to very interesting questions, like those with the bubbles or those with how people are satisfied with different price formation, price charge. And in the end, I became professor 2010. Is it something I would recommend to others? I don't know, because there are not so many positions out there, right? I mean, yeah. We in Innsbruck, we have 5 finance professors.
Don't take my first job.
But what I can recommend is that, people should read about behavioral finance, behavioral economics, how we behave in reality. And there are very interesting books written by Daniel Kahneman. He got the Nobel Prize. Richard Thaler, he got the Nobel Prize in 2017 as well. Dan Ariely. There's so many interesting books to read. And I think it educates the reader to make better decisions on a daily basis when they go shopping, when they invest on the stock market, when they think about their pension plans and so on. So this is what I can recommend, that the people read about those interesting research, and maybe pursue a master program that has aspects of it, but becoming a professor is nothing that I would recommend, because the job market is extremely thin. So.
Yeah. I'm not going to be like that, sorry, Michael, but typical professors to say, read more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But... You mentioned, I mean, I totally agree with you with the interest in the subject, but you mentioned here your interest in bubbles and how they've always occurred and how we humans tend to always, you know, get dragged along, and yes, it's just going to go up.
Yeah, but the fear of missing out, I think, is very
important. FOMO is insane. But what's your best advice for spotting and avoiding bubbles? Or would you say, what was your best to get? I'm not avoiding them, might be hard, but yeah, basically, what's your best advice to deal with bubbles? I think is the best way to phrase the question. Mm-hmm.
I think there are two perspectives on that. Sorry, that's an answer of a professor. One perspective is from me as an individual investor, what do I learn, or how do I spot potential bubbles, and how do I trade? And the other perspective is from a societal perspective, or the perspective of a regulator, how to spot the bubble and maybe try to prevent the bubble. Maybe let's start with the second one. The second one is, from a society perspective, bubbles are usually not ideal because, you know, prices are pumped up extremely, and then all of a sudden they crash down, I don't know, 50, 60, 70, 95%. So this is pretty inefficient. I would say, as a professor, there's a lot of wealth that is destroyed during the crash of a bubble, and also there is inequality that increases and so on. And the big danger is that bubbles on financial markets can have spillover effect to the real economy, that a recession can really follow a financial bubble, especially if it's a big bubble, if it's stock market wide, if a lot of traders trade on leverage, then the financial industry will get problems, and then it has spillover effects on the real economy. Here my answer is, there will always be bubbles in the future as well, and there have always been some. And it's pretty difficult to prevent future bubbles. That's I'm sorry, I have no better news here. So
would you say we're coming out of a bubble right now?
In which industry or area? Or
I'm just talking the stock market. Yeah, because I mean the Swedish stock market is down like 30%.
Yeah,
I think on wide index.
Yeah.
Would you? I mean, you were talking about percentages in terms of 50, 60, 70, mm-hmm. and here we're talking about the housing bubble that the prices are coming down.
Yeah. There's one important aspect. A bubble is somehow a vague concept. It's vaguely defined. It says but prices that exceed fundamental values by a certain extent or are far above fundamental values, but it's not defined in a better way. So we don't know, is a bubble already at plus 20% of a fundamental or 220%? That's why in reality, it's very difficult to exactly define, is this a bubble? That's why the laboratory is much better suited for this research, because in the laboratory, I know exactly what is the fundamental value because I programmed the asset and then traders trade on that. But coming back to, are we in a bubble at the moment? In a crash period, well, this invasion of Russia to the Ukraine, I mean, this was an external shock, one would say.
Definitely.
So it was an external shock, and you know, the future prospects of the economy are worse now, and that's why stock markets went down. So it's not a classical crash of a bubble where all of a sudden some people start to sell and then panic starts and then more people sell. Here it can be justified fundamentally to a certain degree. Housing market is another aspect. And I think we have problems throughout Europe with housing prices that they have increased pretty strongly during the last years. I think in some cities, one could already call it a bubble that prices increased much stronger than fundamentals of the houses did during the last 10 or 15 years. And there are some reasons, because interest rates were extremely low. So there was also this influx of new investors in certain housing markets. And this drove up the prices pretty strongly. Now it's an interesting period, because now interest rates seem to increase, which makes it more difficult for those that have loans to purchase new houses. And it makes also alternative investments for investors that invested in houses before or in apartments more attractive. So they might go out a little bit of the housing market, which could have depressing effect on prices. Which is actually good for young people, because if they want to buy an apartment or so, prices can become more affordable in the next years.
Michael, don't say that. I just bought an apartment.
Okay.
Michael, keep saying that. I have not yet bought an apartment.
Okay.
but okay. No. I totally hear you about it. Sorry, you were saying.
No, sorry. I think I didn't give an answer to the first aspect as an individual.
Go.
I think as an individual, it's extremely difficult to spot whether this is a bubble or not. Because, I mean, ex post, it's pretty clear to say this can be considered a bubble. But once you're in there, you do not know exactly how the future looks like, right? And therefore, it's extremely difficult to investigate whether this is a bubble or not. To protect yourself from it, you could give yourself targets where you say, okay, if I already made 50 or 60%, I will go out of the asset. But then you should no longer look how the asset developed in the future, because you will always find, you will never have the right position where you go out, and you will always be fed up that you didn't find the perfect timing. So
always
this is also
remorse.
One recommendation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Never look back.
Yes. Because, I mean, you made your decision, you cannot overturn it from a psychological perspective.
Yeah. Definitely. No, but and also in terms of like spotting the right moments to go in. I mean, it's really hard to understand when now is the right moment. And we always speak a lot about evaluating companies by multiples. And that's great and all, but it always comes down to the market deciding on how do we value this industry.
Is it 20 times earnings? Is it 15 times earnings? It's always what the market decides. You can never decide what it's worth, almost.
Yeah. And during Corona or COVID, I mean, we've seen multiples going through the roof. And I mean, looking at multiples is always great and stuff. But I mean, normal steady businesses, I know like Sandviken and stuff have been like price earnings like 40.
Mm.
And that's a company that's never gone over 20. I mean, it might be a nice stable company, but the market valuations have just, it's just hard to understand, okay, is this valuation multiple, is this going to be larger, smaller in the future? Even if the company grows, the market might decide that we don't value this industry that high anymore, or something like that.
The easiest thing to do is probably just to invest in some passive index fund and just
live life.
Live life. Yeah, but you save monthly, and then you will buy both when it's high, but also when it's low.
Definitely. Probably.
I mean, good that you said it, Tim. I mean, one major lesson from behavioral finance is that overconfidence is not good for individual investors. So there are some studies showing that those investors that trade much more than others, that after costs, they have a lower annual return than those investors that have a buy and hold strategy almost, because they hardly trade. And the difference is that before costs, the returns of these two groups are almost identical, and after costs, after the trading costs, and this is of course much, they are of course much higher for those that trade a lot, the returns of the high traders or the high frequency traders are clearly lower, significantly lower than those of the passive investors. So that's unfortunately, after more than 20 years in academia, the thing that I can recommend the most, based on scientific literature, not on storytelling, that's something different, based on scientific literature. Yeah, as a private investor, try to have a mid or long-term perspective of 10, 15, 20 years and go well diversified, broadly diversified in different index products, and do not trade much, because this will always harm your net performance, the trading costs. They are evil.
Commissions and whatnot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Big, ugly, nasty banks always taking a cut.
It's the worst. Sometimes when I buy some international stocks, like in Germany, for example, I have to do a phone order.
Okay.
And the commission is like 2% almost. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's nasty.
Or for instance, if you invest in actively managed funds, I mean, if you really spot extremely fancy actively invested funds that have a very special strategy, I mean, they tell you everything in the prospectus you want to hear. Some of those funds have 1.5 or 2% management fee per year, which is a lot. So let's assume this is a fund invested only in stocks. If you make 6 or 8% per year return on average, that's a lot. But the 1.2 or 2% of commissions or of management fee, that's already a quarter of your annual return. That's a lot if you think about that. Because 1.5% doesn't sound that much per year, but it's around a quarter of what you can expect in return or in performance every year. And that's insane.
Yeah,
definitely.
And this makes you basically dead after 20 or 30 years, because then you have, I think 30, 40. Yeah, your final portfolio value after 30 years will probably be around 40 or 50% of what you would have without management fee. So it sums up over time.
Yeah, of course.
Index funds, here we go.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Michael, I have another question here. The energy market.
Sure.
The energy market.
Oh.
Yes. I like specifics. Would you see that there's a tendency for maybe a bubble form formation there. I mean, in terms of, I mean, it's just demand and what we call it?
Supply.
Yeah, demand and supply. And basically supply being very limited right now and the demand being equal to what it used to be or kind of even higher.
It's a very interesting and highly relevant market at the moment because a lot of people suffer because of this high energy prices. And I think they will even suffer more during next winter.
Definitely.
Yep. So I would not say that this is a bubble because, as you have already mentioned it, I think here simply simple supply and demand logic applies. So, you know, remember, a bubble is defined as prices that are far above fundamentally justified values. I mean, in this case, if Russia really cuts the gas supply by 50 or 60%, I mean, this has supply-demand reasons why the prices went up that strongly. So I would not say that there is a lot of speculation, bubble formation here at the moment. It's, I think, mainly driven by shortage or by the fear of shortage from main suppliers like Russia.
Okay,
unfortunately.
Can you reverse it and can you see oversupply of oil and gas maybe?
Sorry, I didn't get it acoustically.
If you get oversupply, like Saudi Arabia says, guys, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Venezuela, I mean, they're basically banned right now, right?
They have some sanctions on them.
Yeah, and I think US were talking about lifting those sanctions. So, and if everybody opens their floodgates, I mean, can we see a drastic price drop in the energy sector?
I think for oil and gasoline, this could happen. But I think then the other countries, the ones you mentioned, they have to, let's say, supply much more. And the question is whether they want to do it, because at the same time, they benefit from this high oil price as well, right? I mean, they earn much more per barrel than they earned 1 year ago. And with gas, I'm very pessimistic because, you know, especially in Europe, we have this pipeline system. And it's pretty difficult within 2 or 3 days to construct a pipeline from Venezuela to Sweden, for instance, or from other countries. So that's the big problem that we face in Europe, that we are stuck into this infrastructure of gas pipelines.
And how is the development in Austria, for example? Like,
extremely bad.
What is the politician saying? Like, and how is your? We sometimes talk about like the Sweden's energy supply, but we all have lot of nuclear and wind and hydro.
Yeah.
So how is it in Austria?
So I think it's good and bad at the same time. The good thing is we have a lot of renewable energy already. So we have a lot of water energy. So I don't know the...
Hydro,
sorry.
It's great. No worries.
It's already late in the evening. So we have a lot of hydro energy, and that's really a big benefit. We have no nuclear power plants. This is interestingly, there was a debate in the 70s, beginning of 80s, and Austria voted against it. We have hardly any coal, which is also very good for the environment. The only big problem we have is with gas. So a substantial fraction, especially of heating and for the industry, is on gas. And 80% of this gas comes from Russia. So we are extremely exposed to Russia when it comes to gas. And the government is not trying to get alternative sources on the gas supply, but as indicated before, it's difficult to construct pipelines or to have these LNG terminals of this liquid gas because we are not close to the sea. So it's difficult for ships to enter with LNG of these liquid gas terminals.
But as I understand it, I mean, it's very impractical or basically not relevant to ship via boat. Is that correct?
It's very expensive, but, you know, some industries and quite a lot of households, especially in the capital of Vienna, they depend on gas. They have gas heatings. In some industry, like the chemical industry or steel industry, they need high power because in the construction process, they need a lot of temperature, and this can mainly be supplied by gas, and they cannot transform their appliances within a couple of months to other forms of energy. So that's a little bit the unfortunate situation we have in Austria. But hopefully, I think we will manage. So
yeah, hopefully.
Definitely.
We have to.
And also, I have another question, which kind of circles back to my previous ones. But can you see any typical behaviors when there's a downturn in the economy, kind of a recession?
Like you mean like biases or?
Yeah, I read the other day about the lipstick effect, how us humans cannot like withstand luxury overall. So instead of buying big expensive stuff, we buy small expensive stuff like lipstick. So that's why it's called the lipstick effect. But is there any behavior that you can identify in a recession type of period?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I did not do any research on that, but
you only investigated the peaks, not the lows, not the bottoms.
No. But I can imagine. I mean, so this is a conjecture. So we know from the literature, people somehow care about their statues. Okay, so this goes back to tens of thousands of years, and even to the primates, millions of years ago, that for us individuals, it's to a certain degree important, the statues that we have in certain sub-societies, okay? So back in the old days, this was important because of nutritional and reproductional benefits, and also among animals, this is important to have to be the alpha male or to be high up in a hierarchy in a herd. And nowadays, this translates into interesting aspects like luxury industry. Luxury industry is mainly based on me or us signaling to others, look, I can afford this interesting car or this ship or whatever, my private jet. So what I can imagine during recessions is that the people still try to signal that they can afford certain goods, that they are pretty high up in a hierarchy, in an economic hierarchy. And I can still imagine that some of the luxury products will still be bought, but maybe more diversified. As you have said, lipstick or luxury goods that are cheaper than the luxury goods they bought before. But I think this is imprinted in human beings that they want to signal to others that they can afford it. And I think even in a recession.
Maybe they will save out on something else instead.
Exactly. Maybe they save on nutrition, that they buy the cheap food.
I'd rather starve myself than sell my Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, exactly. Or sell my BMW or so to cruise around on Saturday evening. I mean,
I was thinking before we go into the final segment, maybe you can just. What's your favorite biases, and how do you try to avoid them, like in your everyday life?
Let me think about it.
I normally fall into the confirmation bias. I'm always looking for things that proves my theory. I'm like, fuck, I'm only looking at the positives here.
Yeah, you don't want to see like negative comments about your stock, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good to read them though.
Yeah, but I'm aware of it now, so I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I need to find something bad. So
I agree. So I think one major bias, and that's probably relevant for most of us, is the confirmation bias, that we are searching for information that already confirms with what we believe. That's what I fall into this trap as well, but I try not to do so. But simply knowing that this problem exists, I sometimes always try to read up on opposing views. And confirmation bias, I think, is really evil because, especially nowadays with social media and so on, this can lead to those filter bubbles and to conspiracy theories. Because if you take a wrong turn as an individual and go through those conspiracy theories, you will always find some stories that confirm with your strange theory, and you still believe, and it makes you even more confident that this is true. So confirmation bias, I think, is really extremely bad. And all of us should be very aware about it. another bias is, or another behavioral pattern, I would say that is interesting that I try to avoid, is probability weighting bias.
Okay, and what's that?
Yeah, that's our tendency that we overweight low probabilities. We overweight low probabilities and we underweight high probabilities. So this, for instance, explains why people go to the casino frequently, because they really believe the chances that they win are higher than they actually are. So this translates also to lottery stocks on the financial market. So pretty unknown stocks that have an upside potential, but at a very low probability. And I always try to avoid that.
Yeah, like pharma and medical, like when they research new pharmaceuticals and things like that, maybe.
Exactly. 95% of the cases, the company will be crap in 2 years, but in 5%, it will go through the roof. So yeah. That's, and people usually overestimate that. And the third one is loss aversion. And loss aversion means our tendency that we value losses more strongly than we value gains. So for instance, losing 1,000 Swiss kroner hurts me much more than getting an additional 1,000 kroner. So even in experiments, for instance, if you run those experiments where people are offered to lose 200 kroner or they can win 300 kroner, so the expected value is positive actually, then most people will reject this gamble because the minus 200, the potential that they lose 200, weighs more than the additional gain of 300. So this is extremely well investigated and probably a important for almost all of us. And it has several flavors. So loss aversion means if you, for instance, want to purchase a car or a new bicycle or any other equipment that that is more expensive, usually you get trial offers. You can try the car for 1 or 2 days or
maybe 3 months on Netflix.
Exactly, the 3 months on Netflix or the gym membership for free for the first month. And then you already feel like you have this product. And you feel how great the car is and the gym membership is good and Netflix is great and so on. And then losing it or giving it away, so not buying the car or not prolonging the gym membership or Netflix membership, would be like a loss in that perspective. And this is a very nice example of how loss aversion is utilized by companies with all those trial offers. And that's something I'm always trying to get aware of, knowing that as soon as I try to start something like those trial offers or trying out a new car, I'm pretty sure that I will like it. Sure. But that's mainly because of loss aversion, because if I would have to give it away again, then I feel bad, basically. And that's why sometimes I do not try it even in advance, knowing that if I go down this route, I would probably end up with too many cars and too many memberships.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah,
that's really interesting. And I recently heard about one of my colleagues. He did a master thesis sort of in this area where he researched the liquidity premium and in options. Mm-hmm. Put options are often more expensive almost, like when you try to hedge yourself. So when you protect the downside risk, it's always often more expensive, in implied volatility and such. So
yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but it's a really interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey.
If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, should we go to the final segment then maybe?
Yeah.
It's time for the weekly volley.
The veckans volley.
The weekly volley, as we call it.
Yeah. So, I'm guessing you don't know Swedish and haven't listened to our episode.
I know a little bit of Swedish, but it's very rusty.
So. Yeah. But that's not an issue, but that's perfect because then you don't know what's coming.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we have like a weekly, our finishing segment is when we throw a hot potato to each other. So we try to come up with a hot take or something relevant in like society, or it can even be something personal, like, oh, it's the weather is so great right now, you have to enjoy it, or something
like that. But it's only the two of you, right?
No, it's for you as well.
Ah, okay.
So that's the hot potato bit.
Okay, good. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So my hot potato weekly volley is, it actually pertains to the thing you mentioned about Austria and the gas. So like I think heat pumps, it's gone very, very good. And one company I recently heard about is called Grodno.
Oh yeah.
So it's like a Polish company. They basically sell heat pumps and solar panels. So my tip is to do some research on that company.
Yeah, there's a fin tweet stock right now that's going bananas.
Yeah, exactly.
So Michael, you have a hot potato for us, right?
It can be anything, or
it can be anything.
Yeah. Something you spotted the last week.
Not necessarily related to stock market.
No.
Exactly.
So it's just something that okay, to make the listeners aware of something.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. Let me think about it.
Do you want to go ahead, Marcus?
Yep. I have a few.
You have a few?
But wow. I'm going to stick to
the best one.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which one's the best.
Okay.
No, but I saw that Tingstaden is doing new issues of shares right now. Mm-hmm. And they're being really creative with the terms.
Okay.
So it's a real estate company. They normally have a dividend of 8%. I mean, right now they're down a lot, so they're at 8%. Mm. But they're giving out a fully secured new issues of shares, 200 million. And they were giving out a preferential stock with a yearly dividend of 8%. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's called a call option, right?
Yeah.
Or when you can buy a new stock. What's it called?
Teckningsoption.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, I don't know what it's called in English.
No, but yeah, and they issued a teckningsoption with it, which was due until 2030.
Uh-huh.
And that you can at any point in time from like next year, something like that, until 2030, you can swap the option for...
shares.
Yeah. And for 100 kroners, but I think it was 110 kroners. I think the stock right now was at 80. Okay. So and they were
lots to take in here.
Yeah,
yeah.
And they were just being really fun with the rights issue. They were doing lots of stuff.
Okay,
the terms were insane.
Is that a good sign or a bad sign? That's the question.
Mean, the issue was fully subscribed, so I mean they've attracted a lot. And in this climate, doing that, I mean, you have to be creative and do stuff like that.
Yeah, so, I understand. I've seen some IPOs that had like less than 30%.
Subscription,
yeah. So they had to cancel that.
Yes, I've seen 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Michael, the hot potato.
I think I'm ready now. Yes.
Okay.
My hot potato.
Let's go. I'm throwing that at you.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe it's not surprising, but my hot potatoes are two books that I can recommend. So
okay,
that's
great.
Perfect.
Perfect for listeners. When you... want to try to get some sun and read a bit.
Exactly. And I think it's a nice portfolio, the two books. Both books deal with psychology and how we behave, and both books are written from scientists, but it's not a scientific book. It's written from scientists that you it's easy to digest, and okay. It's about everyday decisions. So the first one is from Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein called Nudge, which is about the background of human behavior in economic financial decisions, and how people can be nudged to show certain behavior. This is important for marketing. This is also important for government and so on. So that's a highly interesting book. The second one, that's from psychology. And the authors are Christopher Chabris and Daniel Simons. It's called The Invisible Gorilla. Okay. And all of you that are interested in what this damn invisible gorilla is like, they can type in invisible gorilla experiment on YouTube, and then they can go through one or two interesting experiments, and they know what this invisible gorilla is all about. And it's about about everyday illusions. So that we are usually overconfident. We believe that we are more attentive than we actually are. That's the second book I can highly recommend.
That's perfect. Some summer reading.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I actually remember that now when you said that, the invisible gorilla, that we did the experiment.
Yeah, sure.
So you should definitely look it up on YouTube. It's very fun as well.
Are you on YouTube, Tim?
If I am on YouTube.
Yeah, did Michael put you on YouTube with the...
No. There was no video recording of that.
Okay, before you go, Michael, I need to ask you a quick question. Is Tim a good student?
Yes, he is.
Are you sure? You are allowed to tell the truth.
I can only talk from my course, and I was very happy with the course, Tim, and all the other students.
Thank you.
Professional answer.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for taking your time for us and the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation. It was really a big pleasure, and hopefully at least one or two from the listeners found it interesting and maybe read through one of the two books.
I definitely think so. So great job. Thank you once again.
Thanks.
Ja, Tim, det där var ju gött.
Ja, men det var ett roligt avsnitt.
Det var riktigt fint, måste jag faktiskt
säga. Vi klarade oss väldigt mycket, jag och Michael.
Jag hade lätt kunnat ta en timme till faktiskt.
Alltså, ja, nästan.
Alla de här teorierna, så jag älskar ju det här. Alltså, tänk dig ett glas rödvin, en bättre sen sommarkväll och så Michael vid bordet. Liksom. Det blir fan inte bättre än så.
Ja, nej, det är sant alltså. Vi gick inte ens genom hälften alltså.
Visst.
Är det så. Nej. Men vi får helt enkelt önska er en trevlig sommar. Ja. Men först så ska jag bara säga att allting som vi har nämnt här i podden inte ska betraktas som finansiell rådgivning, utan gör alltid er egen analys.
Visst är det så.
Och om man har feedback, vart ska man gå någonstans?
Till vår Gmail, nontingomaktier@gmail.com, eller så kan ni nå oss på vår Instagram eller vår Twitter, nontingomaktier. Pam, bam, bam.
Det är ju kanon det där alltså.
Gänget,
bra.
Ha en fantastisk sommar nu.
Ja, ha det gott.
Hej.
Hej.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.